Good morning, everyone. Special day today. Anniversary of Mother's final arrival in Pondicherry in 1920. So some people have already been to the ashram and received the message. And I'm going to read it out because it seems so appropriate for us. It's from the mother. We read, we try to understand, we explain, we try to know. But a single minute of true experience teaches us more than millions of words and hundreds of explanations. So the first question is, how to have the experience to go within yourself. That is the first step. And then, once you have succeeded in going within yourself deeply enough to feel the reality of that which is within, to widen yourself progressively, systematically, to become as vast as the universe and lose the sense of limitation. These are the first two preparatory movements. And these two things must be done in the greatest possible calm, peace, and tranquility. This peace, this tranquility brings about silence in the mind and stillness in the vital. This effort, this attempt must be renewed very regularly, persistently. And after a certain lapse of time, which may be longer or shorter, you begin to perceive a reality that is different from the reality perceived in the ordinary external consciousness. First, to go within and find the reality that is within, what we call the psychic being. And then to widen yourself, to become as vast as the universe and lose the sense of limitation. So we've read about Savitri having these two realizations. But Mother says we must all try for that. Because all the readings and the explanations, a single minute of true experience teaches us more than millions of words and hundreds of explanations. So that's today's message.
Thank you, Margaret.
Please make sure that your mobile is set up.
What are you up to, Lorraine? Oh, the fan. So today, we're going to embark on book 10, the book of the double twilight. It has four cantos. The first one is called the dream twilight of the ideal. And then we have the gospel of death and vanity of the ideal. And this is followed by the debate of love and death. And finally, there's the dream twilight of the earthly real, these four cantos. So today we'll start to read canto one, the dream twilight of the ideal. Death has come to take away the soul of Satyavan. And already in book 9, the book of the eternal night, we've seen Savitri pass through this terrible ordeal of darkness, of loneliness, of separation. But she has triumphed, she has come through it, and she has gained from death the boon that that Satyavan's wish that his father's sight and kingdom would be returned, that this has been granted to her. Now we are moving out of the journey in eternal night into the twilight, the double twilight, the twilight of the ideal, the twilight of the earthly reality. First of all, the dream twilight of the ideal. And the first section, we have not yet, Savitri has not yet emerged from the darkness. But in the second section, she comes into a much more bright and beautiful state. So we'll begin by reading the first section. Shall we start on this side? Ganga Lakshmi, you would read?
Okay.
Yes.
Chapter 1, the dream twilight of the ideal. All still was darkness, grid, and desolate. There was no change, nor any hope of change. In this bad dream, which was the house of void, a walk now here in the land of north, ever the grief without end or goal. Gloom led towards gloom, death to an empty death. In some positive non-beings, the causeless vast, the formless vast, dumb and unknowable. And in a feeble beam of suffering light, through the despairing darkness go their steps, like the remembrance of the glory lost. Even while she grew, it seems unreal there. Yet, potted needles shields the canvas real, unquenchable, perpetual, lonely, new, the pallid ghost of some death.
Thank you, Stefania.
It was as if she must pay now her debt, her vain presumption to exist and think, to some brilliant Maya that her soul. This most she must absolve with expanse, her deep original sin, the will to be. And the sin last greatest, the spirit of pride. Death made of dust, it tore itself with heaven. Its scorn of the wrong writing is not. Condemned a funeral, born from nature's dream. Refusal of the transient creature's call, the feeling to be a living fire of God. The will to be mortal divine. In that tremendous darkness, heavy and bare, she opened her all the first act whence sprang the error of the consciousness of time. The ending of the unconscious seal of sleep. The final and unpardoned revolt that broke the peace and silence of the night. Which was before the seeming universe, appeared in the vanity of the imagined space, and life arose in general grief and pain.
the great negation was the real phase from beginning the very process of time. And when there is no world, no creature alive, when time's conclusion has been blotted out, it shall last, unloved, safe from hurt, at peace. Because in what had been had God had sought, condemned to live forever, empty of peace, had immortality, had justice, had spirit, dignity of being, wonder being, moving from ever to eternal life, now.
Thank you. Mila.
But Maya is a veil of the absolute. A truth occult has made this mighty world. The eternal sweet wisdom and self-knowledge are in ignorant mind and in the body's steps. The inconscient is the superconscious asleep. An intelligible intelligence invents creation's paradox profound. A spiritual thought is crowned in matter's form. Unseen, it throws out a damn energy and works a miracle by a machine. All here is a mystery of contrast, darkness, a magic of self-healing life, suffering some secret rapture's tragic mask, and death an instrument of perpetual dying. Although death walks beside us on life's road, a dim bystander at the body's start, and a last judgment of man's futile works, other is the rhythm of its unbeaten space. Death is a step, a door, a stumbling step. The soul must take to cross from birth to birth, a great defeat pregnant with victory. A week to lash us to us our deathless state. The inconscient work in the spirit's self-made room, eternal night, shadow of eternal day.
Thank you. Kenge, would you read? Oh, sorry, would you read? Aureate. Thank you. So I think we can look at this first transitional section before we read any further today. We can see that it's a transitional section linking that experience in the eternal night to what is going to come next. And this is first Savitri experiencing still this darkness and all the dreadful suggestions which that darkness is putting upon her. But then, because of the knowledge that she's carrying in her, Sri Aurobindo leads us on into another state. So, Larry, would you begin?
It means what I make up the idea. All still was darkness, red and desolate.
Yes, yes.
There was no change, nor any hope of change. In this black dream, which was a house of void, a walk to nowhere in a land of naught. Ever they drifted without aim or goal. Gloom led to worse gloom, death to an emptier death. In some positive 9 years, purposeless vast, through formless space, dumb and unknowable.
Yes, thank you. So they drifted. This is Savitri, Satyavan, death. These three figures. They've been moving through this world of eternal night, of blackness. And they are still moving through that. All still was darkness, dread and desolate. There was no change, nor any hope of change. They're still in this black dream, a vast house of nothingness. They are moving forward, but it's a walk that's leading nowhere. They are in a land of nothingness. So they are drifting. Earlier it said that they were drifting as in dreams. Everything went drifting on. But there's no aim or goal. They don't know where they are going. And it seems to be getting darker. Gloom, darkness led to worse gloom. This depth of darkness leads, of emptiness, leads to an even emptier, deep place. They seem to be moving in some positive non-beings, purposeless, vast. Non-being, asat, the opposite of pure eternal existence. So this seems to be a world of asat, a vastness without purpose, without existence, and yet somehow it exists. This is positive non-being. There is some reality in it. They are drifting through these formless wastes that make no sound and which can't be grasped by the mind, dumb and unknowable. Yes? Yes. So there was some change.
Some change, but
at the very end of the last lines,
yeah,
it just says that still is she's traveling through the dumb, unhoping vasts. No? So Sri Aurobindo often makes a link between one canto and the next. So these lines are echoing the last lines of the previous canto. Yes, and this is Savitri's experience. Yes. Josie.
While it grew,
it seemed unreal there. Yet, haunted, needles chilled, stupendous smell, unquenchable, perpetual, lonely, now, a pallid ghost of some dead eternity. It was as if she must pay now her debt, her vain presumption to exit and think, to some brilliant Naya that conceived her soul. This most, she must absolve her endless pangs, her deep original sin, the will to be, and the sin last, greatest, the spiritual pride, that made of dust equaled itself with heaven, its scorn of the warm ripened in the mud. Condemned, ephemeral, born from nature's dreaming, refusal of the transient creature's role, the claim to be the living fire of God, the will to be immortal and divine.
Thank you.
What is this, the original sin? I've heard about this, but I don't know what it is.
Yes. Let's just look at the first sentence first, this ineffectual beam of suffering light, and then I'll explain about the sin. Two kinds of sin. We had this this picture earlier in Canto 1 of Book 9, when Savitri was plunged into a state of absolute darkness. She lost sight of Satyavan. She felt completely alone and isolated, and this feeling that she must live forever in this darkness. No? But in that, then Sri Aurobindo said that her spirit triumphed still. It was not overcome by this darkness of death and unconsciousness. And it appeared as a little light. And now it is something similar, this same little light, a beam of suffering light is following them, dogging their steps through the despairing darkness. It's an ineffectual beam, it's not giving much light, but it's there and it seems to grow. He says that light is like the remembrance of some glory which has been lost, a wonderful memory. And it's growing, but it seems unreal in the midst of all that darkness. But it's still there, it's haunting like a ghost, that chill, stupendous realm of nihil, of nothingness. It can't be put out. It's unquenchable. It's perpetual. It lasts. On the other hand, it's lonely and seems as if it's nothing, almost nothing, without power or meaning. It's like a pale ghost of some dead eternity, an eternal state that has been lost, which no longer exists. And this beam of light is connected with Savitri. It is her suffering, her light, no? So now what she experiences is this suggestion that's being made to her that now she has to pay her debt. Now she's going to be punished, no? For her vain presumption to exist and think. She's had the audacity to exist, to claim the right to exist, to claim the right to think. She has to pay that debt to some brilliant Maya, some power of illusion that has conceived, given birth to her soul. If that power has given birth to her soul, it can take it back also. So, and what is she, what does she have to pay for? She has to absolve, she has to pay off this deep original sin. She has to pay it off with endless pangs. That is the suggestion. She will have to pay with pain forever for this deep original sin, which it is the will to be, the will to exist. That's the first sin. And the second sin, the last and greatest sin, is pride, the spiritual pride that claims the right to be immortal and divine. So this word sin, it's particularly connected with, we can connect it with the Christian religion. And there have been so many debates about this question of sin. It is somehow, the idea is, the concept is, that all human beings are born into a state of separation from divinity. And this is because of Adam and Eve in paradise. They've eaten the apple of knowledge, and the humanity is going to have to pay for that forever. So that even the child, the newborn child, is born into sin and has to be baptized immediately in case it dies, otherwise it will die in sin. I mean, now these are ideas that we find very difficult to accept, but still there are, I think, millions of Christians all over the globe who are still immersed in these beliefs, no? And also in the New Testament, Christ mentions the unforgivable sin. And nobody knows exactly what it is, but it's supposed to be the sin of pride. So that's what Sri Aurobindo is referring to here, the pride of the ego, the self-existence. So, this pride of the human creature that's made of dust, but that is claiming to be equal to heaven, to the beings who live on the higher levels of consciousness. That pride which rejects the status of being a worm writhing in the mud, no? Which the suggestion is that's what you human beings are, really, worms writhing in the mud, dominated by matter. But you are claiming another status. You are refusing to be a transient creature, even though you are condemned to this ephemeral life, this life of short life. You've just been born from nature's dream. You will disappear like everything else. No? What you're being punished for is this refusal of the transient creature's role, your claim to be a living fire of God and to be immortal, the will to realize immortality and become divine. It's as if one has to be punished for being, having a soul, an immortal soul. He says, it was as if she must pay now her debt. That is the feeling that's being projected on her. Yes, if this is the light of the soul, and now it has to pass through this kind of hell, it suffers. Yes, it is like that, one of these paradoxical things. But We can feel that this light belongs to Savitri. It is her light. And now she has to pass through this suffering. Yeah. Those birds are making so much noise. We can't hear ourselves think.
Everybody, please remember, you know, there's all of us can hear you.
Patricia asked whether Savitri is going through this experience because what she represents is the eternal yes. And I could say that that is right, probably. It's because Savitri represents the eternal, immortal, divine soul and its powers that now she's under attack from the powers of darkness, the hostile powers that want to deny this, that are resisting this. That is somehow what this power of death represents in this part of the poem, you know, that he's represents all the negativity. He's the eternal no. So now she's being told no. Now you have to pay for your claim to be eternal and divine. Yeah? Yes, Don.
This is a thought that came to me. But the original sin, we just asked about that with the Genesis and so on there, actually, what is this sin? It's not the meaning of an apple or anything like that. It's gaining the ability to think and to judge morality through this.
Yes, it's connected with the emergence from the purely instinctive state of animals. They don't sin. They just follow their nature. Right? So sin has to do with the human state. But what it represents really is the state of being separated from our divine state, the paradisal state that
of
Adam...
Not thinking, of not thinking, not meaning to think.
That, what did he say? The mechanical harmony of being in perfect harmony with nature. And now, we read it in the Life Divine, no? Now we're passing through this time of pregnant chaos, and we will pass to another state of conscious harmony. But we feel, we can't all of us help feeling, that there's something wrong about this state of pregnant chaos that we are in, because we don't know how to be in harmony with things. We exist, we think, but we are not in tune with the universe. Something like that. We don't know how. Yes. So, if we put a moral connotation to this, and we do, we human beings, we put a moral connotation, that's a state of sin. We're not just ignorant, we do things wrong that are really wrong.
So, that's almost like that we let the mind and the heart through rather than the soul come forward and
do things right.
Yes. So I think the sin is that we have forgotten to let the soul take the lead. And then the mind and the emotions, they are ruling.
Yes. I think we can't really solve this problem of sin here this morning. But here what I want to stress is that this is not Savitri's natural reaction, no? This is a suggestion that's being projected on her, that you have done something terribly wrong. You have violated the laws of the universe. No, and now you're going to have to pay for that. That's the suggestion that's being put on her. Yes. Yes. In the Bible, it's different. Yeah. Disobedience. Yes, of course. Okay, can we go on?
Yeah, the business of being kicked out means, listen, you don't need to stay here. You want to make decisions, go out and make them.
Yes, and in the esoteric interpretation of this story, this is actually the power of evolution, which pushes us forward into this state of pregnant chaos, which with all its unsatisfactoriness, you know, but which is really pushing us forward on our journey. But it appears or it feels to us often as if by becoming human, we've been punished, we've been pushed out of some more harmonious state, and there's something in us which wants to go back to that, back to nature, you know. This load of consciousness, what a terrible burden it is, how much better it would be to go back to an unconscious state. But we can't do that. We can't go back to paradise. We can't go back to the Garden of Eden. The only way out is up, you know, up to that state of higher harmony.
Is paradise really paradise?
Yes, there are many people who have asked that. Yes.
I have the problem with the word spiritual pride. What does he mean by spiritual pride?
Well, the kind of pride which he is describing and which Savitri, it seems, has to be punished for is the pride which claims, I am a living fire of God. I can be immortal and divine. Yes, it is true. Of course it is.
Because I have always used the word spiritual pride in a very negative way.
Here it is also negative. She's thinking she's being punished for this.
Yes, usually we think of spiritual pride as something else.
Yeah.
It's when, instead of true spirituality, the spirituality has got perverted into a kind of spiritual ego. No? But that's not the state Savitri has been in. That's, she cannot be punished for that. She can't be reproached for that. Just as we also, how many people have been martyred for saying that I am God. Or I can become God, for the aspiration to unite with the divine. So that's a human view of spiritual pride. Yes, come on down.
No, I'm sorry, no, I'm going to have to call on you. There's one other point too. If you look at nature and all the creatures of nature, plants we don't know very much about, of course, there. They can only handle what is there, when we can go ahead and make abstractions and live by them. Give me God, please. Anybody have God? It's an abstraction. India, yes. Well, it's an abstraction. And so on. And we have the ability to create these things.
Yeah, it's very clear that we are not animals. We have an animal body, and we can view ourselves as animals. And there's a very strong suggestion to people nowadays that that's all you are, you're just an animal. So that gives people the license to behave like animals. But in fact, that's not the truth, because we do have higher possibilities. We not only have the possibility of a conscious choice, we have also the possibility of discovering our divine part. We have a divinity within us.
And in creating what you see yourself.
Yes. Yeah. So let's go on. No? Who was next to read? Young lady next to Larry, you will read, yeah? Yes, here we should really try to understand this, because this is connected with death, no? Not with death of the body, but with this being of death who is confronting Savitri now. In this tremendous darkness, heavy and bare, she has to atone. This is what you have to do for sin. If you've committed a sin, you can only set it right by atonement. And that is often comes through suffering. So now she is being told, you are atoning, you are paying, no, for everything which has happened since the first act of creation, from which sprang this error of the consciousness of time, the awareness of time. The act which rent the inconscient seal of sleep. This sealing up of everything by the inconscient sleep. Consciousness has woken up. She has to pay for that first act, and the revolt against the law of unconsciousness, the primal revolt, which is as yet unpardoned, hasn't been forgiven, no? Because that initial act broke the peace and silence of the nothingness which was before a seeming universe appeared in a vanity of imagined space. If we think of that state of asat, of non-existence, asat is the Sanskrit word, sat is pure existence, asat is its non-being, its negative. So there's some imagined time before of peace and silence when there wasn't anything, the peace and silence of the nothingness that was.
If you're not there, how can you have peace or silence? Not peaceful or peaceful.
Yes, well, please let's not argue with the powers that be. No, the suggestion is that there was a state of peace and silence, and it's all been disturbed by the creation of this material universe, which has appeared, which doesn't really exist. It's appeared in a vanity of imagined space, this space and time. And out of that, even life has arisen, and that has given birth to grief and pain. All this is a terrible contravention of reality. Before all this illusion arose, a great negation was the face of the real. And that was saying no to the whole process of time. So now we are in this other state where we have to pay for existing. No? But when there will be no world anymore, no creature more, when this intrusion of time has been blotted out, it shall last, that nothingness, that asat. No? Unbodied, saved from thought, at peace. This is what she's supposed to pay for. This intrusion, this revolt, this contravention. So we can link it to the apple. If we say that the apple is the fruit of the tree of knowledge, and that by taking it they became conscious beings, then that's what we're all being punished for. You know.
Isn't punishment being used by the religious people when actually it's not punishment?
Here, the suggestion that's being put on Savitri is that she has to atone. She is being punished. And she's suffering.
This is the narrator.
Yes, it's the narrator speaking.
So it's interesting that he takes this kind of perspective and then he sort of balances it towards the end.
He's going to reverse it completely, of course.
but on the other hand, it's, I wonder, I mean, in some sense, there's a pretty strong truth in this, in a sense. I mean,
yes.
He has to suffer and he has to go through all of this.
Yes. And this, I think the reason why it's here is because this is an experience which human beings may go through in life or in death. No, that something has gone seriously wrong and now you're going to have to pay for it from a certain point of view. But if we change the point of view, then it all becomes different.
It's interesting, he makes the transition, he says something other is the ambiguous thing.
Yes.
Something like that. So it's like there's kind of these two sides of the two ways of looking at it.
By now, all the reading that we've done, I think that death's suggestions are not convincing to us. And yet we recognize a certain convincingness that is there. No? We recognize that in certain states and moments, yes, that's what we believe. That's what we experience.
So we are getting old, our bodies deteriorating. Is it an effect of death on us, or it is the life's existence?
If we can get to the bottom of the page, he will explain directly exactly what it is. Yeah. So, we continue with Savitri's experience. Narendra, you would read.
A thirst in what had been her Godhead source, condemned to live forever, empty of bliss, her immortality, her chastisement, her spirit, guilt of being, wandered, doomed, moving forever to eternal night. But Maya is a veil of the absolute. Her truth, occult, has made this mighty world. The eternal's wisdom and self-knowledge act in ignorant mind and in the body's touch. The inconscient in the superconscient sleep.
Yes, thank you. So two opposing sentences. one describing the condition of being condemned, accursed. The fact that she has an eternal, immortal soul is a factor in this curse. No? She's accursed in what had been her source of divinity. She's condemned to live forever empty of bliss. That's hell. Her immortality is her punishment. So if looked at from this point of view, her spirit is guilty, guilty of existence, and it has to go on wandering in this world of darkness, moving forever through eternal night. But then Sri Aurobindo turns it all on its head. He says that Maya that she's supposed to be paying to, that this Maya that has conceived her soul, this Maya is a veil of the Absolute, of the Supreme. A hidden truth has made this world, this mighty world. The Eternal's wisdom and self-knowledge are acting through this ignorant mind and through this body. That state of inconscient from which we have awoken is also the sleep of the superconscient. We read a wonderful paragraph in The Life Divine where he explains this so marvelously. Everything that is in the superconscient is in the inconscient. It's asleep. All the potentialities that are there in the Supreme are in the inconscient. So here he puts it in one sentence. So if it's like that, this whole process that Savitri is going through takes on a different meaning and shade and significance. Manoha, what do you read?
Unintelligible intelligence invents creation's paradox profound. Spiritual thought is crammed in matter's forms. Unseen, it throws out a damp energy and works a miracle by a machine. All here is a mystery of consciousness. Darkness, a magic of self-hidden light, suffering some secret raptures, tragic mask, and death, an instrument of perpetual life. Although death walks beside us on life's road, a dim bystander at the body's start, and last judgment on man's futile words, other is the reader of its ambiguous face. Death is a stair, a door, a stumbling stride the soul must take to cross from birth to birth, a grey defeat pregnant with victory, a whip to lash us towards our deathless state. The inconscient world is the spirit's self-made room, eternal night, shadow of eternal.
Thank you. Is it clear?
Yeah,
this is Sri Aurobindo speaking. Yes, exactly. Yes.
I would like to speak a little bit. The inconscient world is the spirit self-made room of this context.
If we think of in the inconscience with which the material universe seems to start, these primitive forms of matter that the physicists tell us were there at the Big Bang. No? We consider that they have no consciousness, or they seem to be without consciousness. But he's telling us that this world of matter, which seems to be inconscient, actually this is the room, the space, which the spirit has created for itself. And this, if we go back to line 54, into matter's forms, all these forms of matter, these atoms and molecules and then more complex forms, spiritual thought is crammed into all these. All this has been created by an intelligence that is unintelligible to us. We can't understand it. Yeah. But that has invents, or he says invents. It's going on inventing this paradox, this contradictory mystery of creation. And the spirit is, we don't see it, but it's throwing out, projecting a dumb energy, and it's working a miracle through what is apparently mechanical, through the mechanical action of what we call prakriti, which seems to be unconscious, routine, dominated by laws of physics. No? So everything here is a mystery of contraries. What seems to be might be the opposite of what is, or perhaps these two opposite faces are both real. Everything here is a mystery of contraries. Darkness, this terrible darkness that Savitri is passing through, is also a magic of self-hidden light, light withdrawing itself. Suffering is like a mask that we wear, that the ancient Greek actors put on. They had a special mask for comedy, with a big smile, and one for tragedy. So suffering is like the mask of tragedy, but behind the suffering, there's some secret rapture and ecstasy, which is always there behind all the masks. And death is an instrument of perpetual life. And this is what the biologists will tell you also, that life goes on. The elements of your life body may dissolve, but they remain in the life chain. Once a molecule or a cell has become living, it goes on living. It remains in the chain of life. So what happens for us, what you were asking about, is this gradual decay with aging, and when it reaches a certain point, the soul says, I can't use this rubbish anymore. Drop it. I will move on. No? So death is an instrument of perpetual life. It allows the soul to make progress.
So we should welcome it. Death said, I'm not visiting you guys. Mm. We are stuck here.
Yes, then we'd be really stuck. Yes, yes.
So we should be thankful to you for
that. We have to recognize its usefulness.
Yes.
Yes. It's not that we should welcome it or call it or decide that we've had enough of this life and we'll kill ourselves. That's really not a very good thing to do. The soul will decide. Mother has said that it's always the soul that decides the moment of death. Should be.
Then he obeys the soul and he comes and he takes the life of it.
Yes, yes. So death is a stair, step up.
So soul means our soul, universal, is it?
This is true for all of us, no? And each of our individual souls is a portion of the one soul, of everything. So, but for us personally, for our souls, death is a stair, a way of moving upwards. It's a door. Or it may be that we just trip. We're taking a big stride, but we trip on the way, we fall. No? But In either case, we're passing over a threshold. The soul has to take that step to cross from one birth to another birth. So it may look like a grey defeat, but it's pregnant, it's going to give birth to victory. Yes. And it's also something that spurs us. The knowledge that the body must die, that we have to pass through this process, is something that can goad us to undertake the necessary effort to find our deathless part and our immortal state. And as you were saying, it impels our creativity. We have a kind of sense that we have to achieve certain things in this brief span of a lifetime. So it's a whip to lash us, to drive us forward to our deathless state. So just in these few lines, it's less than 20 lines, no, it's only 18 lines. Shobindo is telling us, giving us a very compressed expression of his vision of life and death and cosmos.
I'm asking this question. If anyone knows,
don't apologize. Just
okay,
ask.
I just can't remember. If can light be so concentrated that it becomes blackness?
All this is concentrated light.
So that's it.
No.
Yeah.
Light. Light is the fastest moving form of matter. If the matter slows down, it becomes solid, dense, also inconscient. And we equate light as the physical representation of consciousness. So it's true of consciousness also. Matter is the densest form of consciousness.
So it's true that the inconscient or the rock is sleeping consciousness?
Yeah.
It's actually physically true?
Yes. If that potentiality of consciousness were not there, none of us would be here. It's absolutely real. And if we think of the process of evolution, that more and more consciousness is being released from this material form, we can imagine that instead of just fading out, the whole material universe will eventually become fully conscious. I don't know whether the actual speed of vibration changes or not. But a new...
They are talking about light bodies and all, I'm sure.
They are talking about subtle bodies, no? There's this gross matter that we have no here, but it's completely pervaded with, filled with, all the levels of subtle matter, up to supermind, beyond.
This is light.
Yes.
We all have the wavelength, different wavelength, you know?
Sorry?
Every lighting has a different wavelength.
There are also different wavelengths of light, yes.
The light stops at the physical world. I think we are talking of electrons and the protons, all these act in the physical world.
Well, there's, as Helmut just mentioned, there's Einstein who showed us that E equals mc squared, that there's a convertibility from light to matter and matter to energy. And Mother says the next step is to realize that all energy is conscious energy. consciousness. So there's another equation. I don't know what it looks like, but and consciousness is a property, a quality of existence. Existence, consciousness, energy. No, I mean, if we could really understand this, we would look at the world differently.
What we're doing now is collaboration, human unity. This is where I'm interested in acceleration.
Yes.
Yes. Instead of, you know.
You see, it's about in the equation, instead of square, we will have an infinity symbol.
Yes, yes, that's right.
I'm really wanting the eight terms.
So I, after all that, I mean, it was quite intense today. I really feel like reading the message again. Yeah, this is the mother's message of today. No? We read, we try to understand, we explain, we try to know. But a single minute of true experience teaches us more than millions of words and hundreds of explanations. So the first question is how to have the experience to go within yourself. That is the first step. And then once you've succeeded in going within yourself deeply enough to feel the reality of that which is within, to widen yourself progressively, systematically, to become as vast as the universe and lose the sense of limitation. These are the first two preparatory movements. And these two things must be done in the greatest possible calm, peace, and tranquility. This peace, this tranquility, brings about silence in the mind and stillness in the vital. This effort, this attempt, must be renewed very regularly, persistently. And after a certain lapse of time, which may be longer or shorter, you begin to perceive a reality that is different from the reality perceived in the ordinary external consciousness.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that came by email.
This is the message which was distributed at the ashram this morning. So it may have been circulated by email also.
You can also go to the ashram and left side there is a shop you can ask.
So Savitri has had this true experience. We read about it in cantos 6 and 7 of book 7. And it's because she has had that experience that she's able to face all these distortions and perverted suggestions that death is throwing at her. She can go on doing that, on and on and on and on, until she gains the fulfillment of her will, because her will is a divine will. It's not a human, egoistic, mental will. And that will is not for anything for herself. It is for earth and men. It is to accelerate the whole evolutionary process, to open up the possibility for human beings to lead a diviner life here on earth. That's the theme of this poem. So let's stop there for today. we can listen to Mother reading some of these passages. In Canto 1.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.